Hey folks, this is Abe Shreve. Welcome to the Choose Difficult podcast. The path to success is not easy, and here we explore the stories of those who choose difficult and change the world they live in. Now, today's guest is the president of the largest real estate company in the known universe. His name is Mark King. That real estate company is Keller Williams International Real Estate. But that is not all Mark's doing. He has 17 different businesses, and they range from commercial buildings and residential holdings to seven different Keller Williams offices that he has ownership in. And he's the majority owner in two of those, and those two offices routinely perform in the top 25% of all of Keller Williams real estate offices. That's a lot. He has ownership in title companies in a Keller Williams region. I mean, it goes on and on. And when you see Mark, you see someone who is polished, authentic, someone who is quick on their feet. They're quick to help people out. But what you don't see is that where Mark is today is worlds apart from how he started. Mark told us that he had an alcoholic dad and his mom had to work three jobs. Mark told me that they went from family member to family member, and that the story was just until they get back on their feet. But they soon blew through the whole family and started living in their car. In fact, Mark says that the running joke in the family was when he was nervous and he wanted a nightlight, he just had to kick the car door open. Now, that is not who you see today. And that is why this story is important. It's one thing to see Mark in this position leading thousands and thousands of people as a successful businessman, but it's another thing to understand his journey to that position. Because in understanding what Mark had to do, how he leaned in to choose difficult, you and I are left without excuses. So we begin the story with a look at Mark's father, who was an alcoholic and addicted to gambling.
He was a functioning alcoholic until he got to probably 30 years of age. And then it kind of went overboard. And it wasn't just the alcoholism. It was the alcoholism with gambling. So anything my mom could do to provide for the family would then get wasted or spent, or, I'll never forget, my dad was also, there were a lot of great things about my dad. He was a tremendous golfer. He was a pool hustler. He was every 1970s bad movie of bowling hustlers that you've ever seen. That was the environment my dad grew up in. And he had a really rough life. But there's a kind of a famous incident in our family history where he won a golf tournament, and it was a Calcutta. And if you know anything about golf tournaments, there's a lot of these things where you might win a couple $1,000. And so he won a couple $1,000 and we were all so excited and we celebrated at the course. And then he disappeared and came home 3 days later, had gone straight to the airport, straight to Las Vegas, lost all the money and came back. And so within 3 days, we were again destitute. And that's the environment that we lived in. And my mom, bless her heart, she would work any and every job she could find. She would, she always seemed to have an extra $10 bill for me somehow, some way, but she would work. She'd work at Dillard's during the day. She'd get off, go straight to TCBY yogurt, and then she'd get off and go to Pizza Hut or wherever. And so it's ironic, for the first several years of my childhood, my mom was stay at home. And then over time, she became gone all day. And of course, my dad was gone all day too. So I really, from the time I was very young, I was alone a lot or with friends a lot and that sort of thing. So I had to develop some social skills that most kids don't have to at that age.
Mark would use sports as the vehicle to develop those social skills. In fact, he played a lot of sports. He was really athletic. He played five different sports in high school, and he would play three sports in college. That's amazing. He said that while he was in high school, he joined the golf team. Remember, his dad is a guy that was really good at golf and would take people playing golf. He would scam them. So Mark grew up playing golf. He said it came easy to him. And it happened that on this high school golf team, there was a collection of golfers that were all just really, really talented. Mark had an offer. He had a scholarship offer to go to the University of Missouri and play baseball. But he chose to go to a smaller school because he felt like he could accomplish more. He had a girlfriend at the time. He told me that this wasn't a decision he would do again. In fact, he'd really like to see what he could have done on the bigger stage. As fate would have it, all of Mark's fellow high school golf team teammates had all gone to the same school. They'd gone to Kansas City, Kansas Community College. And Mark decided to transfer there and join him. He said, I'm not going to miss this. And it was an amazing ride. In fact, they were ranked 16th in junior college, that golf team. Following college, Mark would travel around and play professional golf. But he came to this understanding. He loved playing the game. He just wasn't really making money.
I started playing golf for a living in Texas. And so I went on the mini tour and I traveled all around the state of Texas. And I did this for a full year. It happened at the same time that I met the person who would become my wife at the time. And so I knew I needed to make money. And I had spent $8,000 traveling around Texas, playing in all the tournaments and doing all the things to make $12,000 in earnings. So for the year, my net income was $4,000. And that just wasn't going to cut it for building a life and doing those sorts of things. And I was working at UPS at nights and doing anything I could to keep the lights on, chasing my dreams, right? And so I met a guy out there on the mini tour who, after each round, would go back to his hotel room and he would start recruiting. And he had several accounts and he would match up, at the time, resumes on Monster.com or Dice or some of the job boards and some of the job openings from a company that he worked with. And I went back to his room with him one night, and a lot of nights I'd sleep on his floor. He had sponsors and different things that I didn't have. And so he was gracious enough to let me crash with him. And one night I went back with him and listened to him. And I said, you know what? I think I can do that. And so 30 days later, I had a full-time job recruiting technologists to Sprint in Kansas City, which is where I was from originally and knew a lot of people. And so I just started working. And my first month, I made $16,000, which was the most amazing thing in my life. That was more than my parents had made combined that year. And I did it, you know, in 1 month. And so I learned very quickly, hey, there's more ways to be successful in this world than just playing center field for the Royals or being a movie star. Like in the environment I grew up, there were very few people that ever got out. And so the people who got out were the people who went on to the major leagues, or they, you know, they did something one in a million type of shot. And that's what you see me chasing in my early life, is trying to find that lottery ticket, if you will, of getting out. Once I realized that there was a different way and there were people being successful and what I would call normal at the time, that set me on fire. And I started studying, how do I perform at the highest level in this role? Well, very quickly, I was promoted to manager of that entire company. So I'm 24 years old, managing a bunch of 40 to 50 year olds who'd been doing this for 30 years. And this is going to sound, I don't mean this to sound the way it's going to come out, but I was outperforming all of them because I didn't know what I didn't know. I just knew if I got there early, if I, what we call now lead generated, if I built up a big enough pipeline, that over time, I'd be able to make more placements than anyone else. And that's what I did. I was probably the worst leader that company's ever seen. I didn't know how to lead, didn't know anything about leading. In fact, I took the approach of, it's really not that hard, but I don't understand why I'm the first person at the office and the last to leave. And, you know, by the way, in that industry, the average person makes one placement a month. And the pay is, it's much like real estate, the pay is really good when you make that placement, and it's not easy. So you might make $5,000 from one placement as a technical recruiter at that time. And so what you would see is, out of the 20 some odd employees, they'd make their one placement. You wouldn't see them for a couple of weeks. Well, I thought, if I can make one placement, why can't I make two? Right. And that just set me on this journey. That business and my real estate business are very similar. And it's the same margins. It's the same tactics. It's the same strategy, just a different widget at the end.
Mark would fall prey to the temptation of many business owners. What I mean by this is, they take their top person and put them into leadership. But sometimes that's a great move, because you get to replicate and duplicate a person's drive, maybe even their skill. Maybe that person even loves leading others. But what you often do is take someone that's really good at selling the widget and you put them in an environment that has an entirely different skill set required. And Mark, like me, and probably so many of you, would have some really intense failures to help him learn what leadership is and to shape what kind of leader he would become.
I'm sure I was doing all the wrong things, but you know, leadership was such a foreign concept other than what I knew in, on the athletic field. So on the athletic field, I would just gather everybody together. We'd have our players meeting and say, hey, we got to work a little harder. We got to, you know, let's come together. Let's fight for each other. Let's do those things. And, you know, you can imagine the environment of 20 some odd professionals having this, you know, young whippersnapper come in. And I had lots of people pull me aside and say, hey, you're making it really hard on the rest of us. You need to slow down. And that's a constant theme in my life. I've never understood that mentality and refused to kind of concede to that mentality. So I'm sure I handled the leadership lessons all the wrong ways. And that engagement, by the way, lasted about 18 months. And I think I had alienated every person I worked with one way or another. And so that was, it was hard for me because I also like people and I want them to like me. I have, you know, a childhood of, you know, wanting to level my self-esteem with whoever I'm competing with, right? And on the athletic field, I can run faster, I can hit harder, I can perform. And so I got into business thinking that's the mentality I need to win. And by the way, athletics has rewarded that behavior. I have all these great friends. I'm the captain of the team. You know, I'm all these things. I'm a leader. Well, that's not leadership, right? The ability to influence on the athletic field through performance is different than in the business environment. And so, or at least I thought it was at the time. And then what I learned, and there's this old quote by Nick Saban where he says, and I'll get it wrong, I'll butcher it, we'll have to find the exact quote, but it says something to the effect of high performers don't like mediocre people, or performers and mediocre performers don't like high achievers. And I've lived that out in a lot of areas. What I had to realize is not everybody had the same goals, the same ambitions, the same understanding of work-life balance that I had. And it wasn't everyone else that had the issue, it was me. And so once you learn to lead in a different manner by loving people, right? You lead through influence. You lead by doing the right thing and having a high level of integrity and helping people when they're down. And I think there was one guy, his name was Shelly. And I used to help him. He struggled mightily. And I used to make a placement or two for him every month because he was struggling financially. And what I've learned over time, and that's carried on with my real estate career. I started organically teaching classes in that environment to teach people how to recruit more, how to convert more, you know, what to say, what not to say, scripts and dialogues, that sort of thing. And so once that happened, suddenly I had a super strong ally. And then all of a sudden, the environment started to change.
Notice that the environment started to change as Mark started to learn how to teach others to be skilled. He had become skilled, which is why he'd gotten the results that he had. But now that he's in the leadership role, what he understands is his job isn't to be the one who's skilled. It's to help everyone else be skilled so that they can have the same type of growth. He would do really well in that position, but he wouldn't really get to see it all the way through because he would take a corporate job. He'd become a recruiter for Sprint inside, and he would move away to do it.
I was in the corporate life. There were things I loved about it. There were things I didn't love about it. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to build my passive income. And this is another theme. Anything I want to get better at, I study relentlessly, probably obsessively. And so I started studying passive income in all areas. And what I kept coming back to is everyone who had significant passive income had real estate investments. So I started studying it at a high level, started to buy properties with the little money that I could muster. And then I made a plan that I was going to buy enough investment properties and hold them, and I was going to cash flow them to equal or beat my current salary. And then I'd be passive, I'd be free, and I could go back to playing golf, and I wouldn't have to worry about sponsorships and all that good stuff. That was my grand plan at the time. So it went horribly. I got three of my buddies involved. We all put up $4,000, which was all the money we had at the time. And we put $16,000 down in this little house. It was a little bit too far on the wrong side of the tracks in town, paid a little bit too much for it. There was a little more work than we expected to rehab it. We paid a little bit too much for that rehab. We waited a little bit too long to market it, attempted to sell it ourselves rather than hire a professional. Then we paid a little bit too much to sell it. And at the end of the day, we lost all our money. And what's interesting about that, Abe, is to this day, this isn't verified, but I believe to this day, those other three buddies have never invested in a piece of real estate other than their personal house. And I looked at it as a $4,000 Carlton Sheets seminar. Like, here's all the things you do wrong so that you learn from this so you get better. And so in my career now, I've invested in, bought and sold tens of millions of dollars worth of real estate now that started off with a $4,000 crash course on all the things to do wrong.
I want you to pick up on what Mark has just said, that many would look at this as just nothing but failure. He somehow, and I think we're gaining a little insight into how he does this, Mark saw this as an education opportunity. That is a hallmark of those that lean into the process of choosing difficult and gaining great success. When they fail, they extract the learning and then they move on. They don't allow that failure to hold them hostage. Now, Mark's disposable income is gone, but he is working with a couple of guys that are flipping houses. And he has not lost his desire to figure out how to create passive income and wealth through creating passive income.
I'd lost all my disposable income, was still working, you know, for Sprint, that sort of thing. I made all the personal financial mistakes you could possibly make, bought a house a little bit too big and had to have the nice car and all those things, the country club membership. And so I was literally living at my means, no matter what my means were. And it was taking my goalposts further and further away. So what I did, though, is I learned how to find properties. And I started studying, you know, how to build a criteria for investment property and, you know, who would be buying in certain parts of Kansas City. So I learned the market really well. And I would, at that time, you know, when I started in real estate, we still used the broker books. MLS was just emerging, but it was incomplete and it wasn't necessarily the best place to go search. So what I did is I started finding these properties that were great deals, but I couldn't buy them. So I finally ran into, I was referred to a guy that flips houses, and he and his partner, Brad and Chris, and they would buy one property a month from me that I found. They would flip it and then they would have me sell it. And so I'd earn something like $1,000 on the buy side and maybe $1,500 on the sell side. And so I'm working full time. I had a whole strategy. I would look at 100 properties, either on paper or online, to identify 10 that I would visit in person. And out of those 10, we'd make offers on 3 on average to get one. And that was my formula. And what happened over time is I started finding more and more good deals. This is in the early 2000s, before like the mid 2000 ramp up bubble. And so when I did that, I would go to them and say, hey, here's another one. Here's another one. I was wanting to increase my income. And they were like, slow down. We can only do one at a time. So I started looking for other investors, and I ended up building this whole network of investors and realized very quickly, they're taking all the risk. They're spending their time, their resources, their money to flip these houses. I get the buy side and later the sell side. I'm just going to build a network and just be the person who finds the properties. And that very quickly turned into a big business. And so that's kind of what logically led me to do this. And at one point I went to them and said, hey, why don't you cut me in on 10% of the next deal you do? And they said no. And so I went and found someone who would, right? And I started getting little pieces. And man, I was so excited. My first property I made $50 a month on. I was so excited. And then that led to $400 a month, which led to a couple thousand a month. And suddenly I was rocking and rolling by partnering with people who had the money. But what also happened at that time is I built a phenomenal network. And as it turns out, no one was going to the length of research I was going to find these deals. So by the time I put a deal in front of you, you knew you'd make money on it. But I learned kind of how to help other people make money and have them leverage their resources so that I could benefit. And one day, I'll never forget, I was making a lot of offers on foreclosed properties at that time. And I got a call from Fannie Mae. And they said, your name is on the buyer side of so many of these houses. Would you be interested in listing some? And I said, okay. And that began a 6-year journey where they would send me on average, you know, 5 new listings a month. And suddenly I had a baked in big business on top of my sphere of influence, on top of my investor side, et cetera. And so it sounds like an overnight success story. It really wasn't. I did go through the years of playing golf too much and doing all the fun things as well. But I had no business acumen. I had no accounting background. I didn't understand what it meant to pay up to 40% of your money in taxes. Like there was a lot of challenges from a business side I didn't understand. I didn't understand leverage and building a team and all those things. So I struggled mightily with scaling my business. And in 2007, I sold 225 houses, which at the time was a lot, right? 2008, I had built a team by then, and my team was number 67 in the country, any real estate company in closed units at 245. And by the way, that shows you where we were back then compared to where we were today, right? 245 houses is a lot. And yet I don't think we'd crack the top 1,000 right now, but that's kind of what led to that. And along this journey, you start to see in this company anyway, you can't hide. And so I was immediately approached for team leader opportunities and OP opportunities and that sort of thing.
When Mark says that he was approached for TL and OP opportunities, what he's talking about is a team leader, which in the Keller Williams real estate vernacular means someone who runs an office, CEO of a real estate office. And an OP is an operating principal. It's the majority owner of a real estate office. And then they will hire a TL to actually run the business. Notice that Mark said he didn't have business acumen. I want to pause on that for a moment because he has so much drive, so much grit, a desire to learn. He leans into failure, but now he's telling us he doesn't have business acumen. No one's taught him how to be fiscally responsible or how to win with money or how to scale his business. In fact, he told us that he decided to sell his business and lean into some of these leadership opportunities. And in 2008, he sold his business for $1 million because there were a lot of people that were being foreclosed on. But as history would tell, he only collected on about $250,000 of that because you know what happened in 2008. And so there are a lot of lessons, but he does something that I think is brilliant. And maybe I think it's brilliant because it's what I did. It's the reason our company exists. He said, there's things about business I don't know, so I'm getting a partner. I'm hiring a coach.
Coaching was a byproduct of me not growing, and I was searching. And I heard Gary Keller say something to the effect of, if you're not hitting your goals, you're missing a relationship. And in that conversation, he said, if you've got all the right people around you, but you're just not hitting your goals, it may be a coach you're looking for. And so my first shot at coaching was through Robert Kiyosaki in personal finance coaching. Remember, I came from a very poor, I knew nothing about money. I'm studying it feverishly. I want to know more about it. I had started to build up this portfolio of investments, many of which were just a wreck, and for many reasons. And so I hired a coach. I paid $6,500 for the year at the time, which was a massive amount of money for me to pay for a coach. And I got my binder. I learned what a balance sheet was for the first time, what a profit and loss statement was for the first time. And it really started to emerge me into this idea of building cash flow. And so I was always accustomed to coaching, and I loved coaching and from my athletic background, but I didn't realize that in business, coaching was just as or more important than it was in the athletic field. And that really, you know, spurred me on to think, okay, now I need somebody who specifically can help me in my niche being real estate.
Listen, I want you to hear this. Hear me when I say this. If you're doing this alone, you're making it harder than it needs to be. Mark has just told us that now he's discovered the power of a coach, of bringing a coach with specific insight and skills to where he is now. And a coach's job isn't to tell you what to do. It's to help you gain clarity and hold you accountable to doing those things. And in order for that coaching relationship to work, it requires that sometimes as a coach, we hold up a mirror. Sometimes it's a window. Sometimes we need to fly you out to the future so you can see what's at stake and what you can gain. Sometimes we have to hold up a mirror so that you can understand, who do I need to become in order to get what I want? It all comes down to a willingness to push ourselves beyond the comfort zone and to live in that discomfort, to choose difficult.
To go up, you have to give up, right? One of John Maxwell's 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. What I think a lot of people, including myself, from the outside looking in, they see someone in some role. It could be president of the United States. It could be a famous athlete or movie star. And they have a tendency to look at that person and say, well, they were lucky. They, whatever the case is. Almost without exception, I believe everyone that I've ever looked into or studied went through tremendous failures before they succeeded, right? They look like overnight successes, but they took 20, 30 years to get there. And there's a pattern there. And that pattern is built. It's much like economic thermostats, right? It's until you've lived through it, failed, had a little success, learned, it's really hard to take that next step. And if you're stuck in, you know, let's say that you make $60,000 a year, you have for the last 3 years, especially in our business in real estate, we could say then your economic thermostat is somewhere within 10% of $60,000 a year. And if you're behind goal throughout the year, you'll suddenly work a little harder and you'll get somewhere close to it. If you're ahead of goal, you tend to, you know, make random purchases you wouldn't otherwise do, or you take more time off, or you vacation more, whatever the case is. And so part of growing as a business person is constantly challenging your own economic thermostat. We all have one. We just have different ones, right? I look at Gary Keller, getting to work with Gary Keller every single day. He's got an enormous economic thermostat. And the way he thinks blows your mind when you have an economic thermostat where mine is right now. So it's constantly challenging that, regardless of what my income is, there are people out there who have bigger economic thermostats. Well, business works the same way. Leadership works the same way. Unless you're living in the uncomfortable and challenging yourself to learn every single day, it's really hard to get better. And it's not crazy challenge. It's unattainable. It's just right on the other side of what you're used to. It's right on the other side of comfortable.
We have established in this podcast that the greats, those that we look to and say they're amazing leaders, do this. They push themselves out of the comfort zone into their next level. Sometimes you find that uncomfortable position on your own, and sometimes it's handed to you in your work circumstances. And Mark found himself in some difficult work circumstances.
I worked for in an extremely difficult work environment for someone who had enormously high standards, right? Way on the other side of comfort, you know, super uncomfortable all the time. And in the moment, I looked at it like it was unbearable. I looked at it like, woe is me, et cetera. And I did. I had stepped back into a team leader role running a local real estate business for someone who would go on to be an executive of the nationwide company. And so the visibility was enormous. You know, the spotlight was enormous, et cetera. And so I had a really difficult time, difficult meeting with my boss at the time, who basically said, you know, you're not getting it done. And I wasn't. And I remember in that moment, I was on my way home from that meeting and I was just mad. And so I called a couple of my good buddies and I said, you're not going to believe what happened. And here's what happened. And man, I just, you know, I'm successful. I have all these businesses and I don't need this. I don't need to take this. And one of my buddies said, why don't you just quit? Why don't you just leave? And in that moment, what I said was, here's the challenge I have. I know I have not given it 100%. I know I have not left it all on the field. Here's my plan. This is the only way I know how to process this environment. I'm going to go out for 12 months and I'm going to hit it harder than I ever have. I'm going to use everything I know to use. And if at the end of 12 months, the environment doesn't change, then I'm out. There's no path to winning.
That was me. I was the friend that he was referencing. And in that moment, I was talking to Mark as a friend who was going through something horrible. But what was interesting to me is there was a moment where we could commiserate, right? We could talk about the challenge of it. But Mark, like he has shown all throughout his life, through some really difficult times, said, there's more I can do. You haven't seen the best of me yet. I'm not going to get beat by what I haven't done. And he just leaned in harder than ever.
In that 12-month period, we believe we had the most successful to that point in our history year in recruiting production to our company anywhere in the country. And it's amazing what happened. By the end of that year, my relationship with my boss was better than it had ever been. Randomly, this is a great point. He gave me a spot bonus, which paid for my wedding in Maui with 19 family members. Our relationship was tighter than it ever been. And what I realized in that moment is that it was me that was causing that environment. It was the excuses I was fighting for myself. It was me not wanting to do the work. It was me. When I got past that, I now said, okay, now I know how to do this. And that led to massive opportunities. And I honestly think I wouldn't be where I am today without that lesson.
Hindsight either holds a grudge or awards a diploma. I made that up just now. But that's true, isn't it? It either holds a grudge or it awards a diploma. You either look back at people and hold them in the state they made you feel during the time that you were with them, or you extract the lessons and credit the time and the difficulty to who you've become today. Leadership today is difficult. It is harder than it's ever been. It's more complicated than it's ever been. And it's also more needed than ever before. And it takes a leader willing to look in and not just point out to really reach today's talent.
Right now, today, leadership is the most challenging it's ever been, right? You have the pandemic, which is arguably the worst any of us have ever gone through. You have, you know, a little bit of social unrest and a lot of challenges facing the work environment and the employer employee in that regard. There's just a lot of challenges that aren't normal. We have the back to work conversation of how do we want to work? Has the world changed? What is this going to look like? Respecting people's family time, et cetera. So it's a really challenging time for any leader. But I think the one thing that I see more people struggle with, and one of the reasons why more people don't get ahead, and also one of the reasons I love the title of this podcast, Choose Difficult, is most people aren't willing to make that choice today. So there's this old saying that I forget where I heard it, but it's said a lot in our company. And that is, you're either preparing for your next opportunity or robbing yourself from it based on the decisions you make. And so many people rob themselves of further opportunity because the decisions they make in the moment. And I think sticking with something long enough to see it through is a rare trait today. I mean, I look at my entire career was, you know, 20 years of doing all the different things that I did to prepare for leading a company our size. It's just mind-blowing. And I wouldn't have been ready at any other stage in my journey. And I hope that today is the worst leader I'll ever be for the rest of my life, meaning I hope that I grow and continue to get better. If this is all there is, then we're all in trouble. But I constantly want to focus on getting better. And I'd like to do it with a little bit less mistakes, a little bit less hard falls. But at the end of the day, it's just part of the process. So you have to be okay falling down, right? It's just how fast can you get up? And you've heard all those cliches. But at the end of the day, it's 100% true. And most people, after they fall down enough, get tired of falling down.
Leading others is a skill. Isn't that what we're learning from Mark? It's a skill. This should be good news for many of us, because what I'm really saying is it isn't a gift bestowed by the gods. Some of us are, it's easier for us to talk to people than others, but that really isn't leadership. Leadership is when you're willing to make a stand for a person's greatness beyond where they're even willing to stand for themselves at times. It's willing to push, hold accountable, help someone grow, be in the moment with them. We heard on the last episode, the one that started season 3, from Liz Wiseman, that the great leaders multiply the talents of others. They're genius makers. Mark, at different times in his life, has been great at certain things. He's a great golfer, and that was front and center in his life at one point. He got good in generating business, recruiting people. That was front and center in his life. But today he sits atop the largest real estate company in the entire world. And the skill he most values is that of how to lead others to their greatness. This is the furthest thing from a top-down leadership style, where someone would say, do it because it's your job. Great leaders help you get clarity. They use a coach approach to help you walk through your performance barriers, for you to be more accountable, for you to catalog your learning, all of those things. That's what a great leader does. In our company, we call it a sacred partnership. And our mission is, we create sacred partnerships that require the best in us to bring out the best in them.
Leadership is definitely a partnership. And what I'll tell you is that, back to this John Maxwell, you know, whether it's law of the lid or to give up, you have to give up. Here's what I've learned. At every stop along the way, there's more and more people depending on you. And I look at my current role as the president of Keller Williams Realty International and 180,000 agents, 170,105 in the United States and Canada today. And then worldwide, we have more. But I look at myself as at the bottom of a pyramid. In other words, everyone in this company is more important than I am to this company. At the end of the day, we have 180,000 people who have to sell homes in order for any of us to have any opportunities. And so my job is to serve all of those people. And the role right before this, there was a little bit lesser of a number. The role right before that, a little bit lesser of a number. But even back to an office environment, I had 300 agents that I had to serve and help them change their lives, right? And so all you do as you progress and grow and lead is help more and more people. It's back to that Zig Ziglar quote, you help enough other people get what they want, you'll get what you want. And today I get to help 180,000 plus individuals.
All right, take a look at where you're taking notes. I've just divided all the listeners. Some of you are taking notes and you're looking at your notes right now. Some of you aren't looking at anything. And maybe you were inspired by something that Mark said or something that was shared today. But the only way that sticks with you and turns into part of your life resume is if you write it down and you name an action. That's what Mark does. I think we've learned so many things from him, from his humble beginnings, being homeless, living in a car with his family, to the way that he got through school, the way that he embraced sports and found his way to great coaches, and the way that he built his social skills through those sports. We learned that Mark was really good at generating business, and when he got kicked, he stood back up. But we learned also that inevitably, in the role of every great leader, there comes a moment where they're not a great leader. And the reason they're not a great leader is because they aren't smarter by experiencing the failures that this new opportunity is about to serve up to those that lean into it, for those that recognize the skills they don't have that are required for this, for those that say, I'm not doing this alone, I'm gonna hire a coach, for those that say, where in all of this is my DNA? What could I have done differently? Those are questions that you hear leaders ask themselves. Those are moves that you see leaders make. I hope you took a bunch of notes. And if you didn't, go back and listen again, because this is an amazing story of the developmental years of a great leader. Well, there you have it, folks. If you're a business leader and you'd like to know what hiring a coach would look like for you and your organization, head over to mymapscoach.com and let's set up a meeting. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving us an honest review. We read them all. I promise it really helps us in our mission to help others. I hope you've enjoyed our time together, and I hope you'll join us next time as we continue to explore the stories of extraordinary individuals who choose difficult.